All right, let's start the workshop for real this time. Before I get into my opening comments, I'd like to introduce myself and ask everyone if they would please introduce themselves. My name is Stan Wolf. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Planning Commission, and I'm acting chairman tonight.
I'm David Church, and I'm a member of the Planning Commission.
Ron Glenn, a Planning Commission member.
Bob Ettner, Planning Commission.
Kevin is Planning the Ivy Fire.
Joe Hyde, acting Fire Marshal, City of Grants Pass.
Mike Shaw, Rural Metro Fire.
How about in the back, sir?
I'm looking Mark, Max Brooks.
Okay.
Kurt Bolzer. Frederick Mifflinman.
You can see it.
All right, Roger Rodon with the Josephine County Planning Department.
Laura Schwartz, Public Works.
Chuck DeZombie, I'm the County Engineer. And just to let everyone know that it's not familiar with the facility, the bathrooms are across the hall. So.
I'm Malcolm Drake. I'm on the Planning Commission also, and I'm also on the Land Development Advisory Committee. So.
Jay Barker, I'm the Planning Director for Josephine County.
Ann Ingalls, Josephine County Planning.
And?
Vivian Kirkpatrick-Filder, the almost late one. And I'm on Josephine County Planning.
Commission. Okay. The purpose of Planning Commission workshop is to familiarize members with, with issues that will come before them, to provide an opportunity for exchanging ideas regarding relevant topics, and to solicit agency or expert opinions to add to the body of knowledge before the commission considers changes to the comprehensive plan, policy, or text of the Land Development Code. Workshops serve as a forum for training new members in procedural or administrative rules and for informing the commission of changes in state statute or case law that affect land use decisions. They provide an opportunity to determine the commission's schedule of upcoming hearings, meetings, or future workshops, and a chance to form subcommittees or focus groups on land use issues. Because workshops are intended to serve the entire membership of the Planning Commission, full attendance is anticipated, and when a quorum is present, meetings are subject to Oregon public meeting laws. I believe we have a quorum tonight. Oregon Public Meetings Law, as I should have said. Notice is published on the county's website, on the county meetings bulletin board, and sent to local news media. Planning Commission workshops are open for the public to attend, but are not an opportunity for public testimony. Now, we began our discussion of the topic before us in sort of an initial way about 3 weeks ago on October 24th at a similar workshop conducted at the Planning Department office. We are considering recommendations made to us by the Land Development Advisory Committee on three topics: road standards, deer winter range, and Article 76 wildfire and emergency safety standards. Tonight's discussion is to continue our consideration of the road standards portion of those recommendations. And with that, I would turn it to staff if you have any comments.
Okay, thank you. Dave Barker, Planning Director. There were four major changes proposed by the Land Development Advisory Committee. For those of you in the audience that aren't familiar with that, a Land Development Advisory Committee was established by the Board of County Commissioners for an approximately two-year period to look at the development code and see where there are some opportunities, where there were disparity between state statute and local codes, and where there were opportunities to enhance opportunity for economic development and change standards if necessary. Because legislative changes to the Rural Land Development Code are a text amendment, they have to go through the Planning Commission in public hearing for our code before they go to the Board of County Commissioners for adoption. We've got four categories, I should say, of changes to the development code that LDAC is proposing to the Planning Commission. And we've also put on the agenda tonight to do Article 76, because several of the local fire districts contacted us and wanted to be at the table when we discussed this. I also wanted to let you know that there is an ORS 368039, and the title of that reads, Road Standards Adopted by Local Government Supersede Standards and Fire Codes, Consultation with Fire Agencies. Essentially what that requires is when we change the road standards and a comprehensive plan or a land use regulation for roads and streets, the governing body of the county has to consult with municipal fire department or other local firefighting agencies concerning the proposed specifications and standards. So that's part of the reason the fire folks are here tonight, to answer questions, give you their perspective on the proposed road standards and Article 76 changes. Public Works staff here is here, Chuck Desjardins, who's the county engineer, and Nora Schwartz to answer questions about how Public Works looks at the road standards. And with that, I turn to a packet of information that the Planning Commission should have. At the top of it is dated July 12, 2010, proposed changes to development code. And you should see four things in, highlighted in yellow. Currently restricted residential roads limited to a total of 5 lots. Second proposed change to allow private streets outside of PUDs. A third recommendation to allow Forest Service and BLM roads to be used for frontage and land divisions allowed off those roads. And a fourth change to allow flag lot designs to be used in the creation of lots so the flagpole access does not cause a traffic problem. This is the four main categories. There's specific code language proposed by LDAC in that packet. Also a response from former planning director Mike Snyder. A few photographs and some exhibits from Public Works staff. With that, I'd like to maybe turn it over to Public Works staff and whatever comments you folks have, and open it up for maybe questions from the commission.
Okay. On a previous code change, actually all the standards for public roads were removed from the Lowland Development Code and placed in the engineering design standards. And I noticed here in the restricted residential road section, some standards, such as the dimensions of the turnouts, are actually not correct, and they are actually proposed, I believe, be in the Rural Land Development Code. Again, the object was to take the public road standards on how to build a public road out of the development code and put it into the road standards book, which is also adopted by the Board of County Commissioners. So that's one comment I had. The road department, although we don't really have a dog in the fight and on private roads, we do have some concerns. One is there's an expectation of the public that we are going to plow the road, that we're going to remove trees from across the road. We are not. We will not take our equipment onto a private road for any reason, because we don't want to lose a piece of equipment by going into a culvert or a bridge that's not satisfactory. I'm certain the fire department, they have same concerns, although they still need to access that. So I'll let them address it when it's their turn. I have a concern also on the private roads where they talk about inspections every 10 years. Here's a copy. I only have 10, so please, look at them and share them. In Mississippi, somebody actually stole the columns underneath the bridge just enough. They left just enough for it to stand, but they hadn't closed the road until they had to repair it. And that's by federal highway. We look at all the bridges every 2 years. If you wait every 10 years, you can just imagine what might happen. If you had a rental house, would you look at it every 10 years? Or would you want to look at the house every 2 years for wear and tear, maintenance, need a new roof? Every 10 years is federal highway requires us to look at all of our bridges every 2 years, and sometimes there are substantial changes. The load carrying capacity, again, fire department will probably talk about that, but if you do put a structure in at 50,000 pounds, you have to post it.
and you have to maintain it, you have to maintain the posting, and it could be possible that concrete trucks, etc., may not make it to multiple properties. The turning radiuses are so tight on the private road, you probably could not get a roof truck down the road for multiple tax lots because of the length of the equipment. As far as ingress and egress, a single lane road is, it's subjective in my opinion, how long you can make it before it starts being a hazard. But just envision one lane of road, and you've got 10 houses trying to evacuate a fire, and you've got a fire department trying to get all of the equipment in. Again, the road department is not going to be maintaining those private roads. So vegetation will grow up, possibly. I did check in with a bridge manufacturing company up in the Eugene area, and they said actually to build a lesser than standard bridge, the components, actually would cost more because they have to retool. They don't build things at less than standard 80,000 pound loads, so they'd have to custom make something. What else do I have? Oh, I was up in the Portland area when I was working up there, when Portland adopted a skinny street standard. I believe that was the term they used, skinny streets. Within the first 2 years, garbage service stopped on those skinny streets because they couldn't get a garbage truck up. Because somebody would park a car, and they just couldn't fit. So everyone then had to take their garbage all the way down to where it intersected a wider street. So I don't know how applicable it is in the rural area, but something for everyone to think about.
We're passing around. There was only 10 copies up, so there's some black and white copies if you missed it. This one.
That's the one I gave you guys a copy of. Yeah, one. Copy of
this one. Thank you. I need a copy.
I just really encourage everyone before they adopt a private street standard to not just look at the cost of building it, but to also think about the people that are going to be trying to build houses, possibly evacuate, possibly, there's a lot of what ifs. What if there's never a fire there? Then it is never an issue. But what if there is? As far as the public roads, they will be designed to meet ASHTO standards. They will be designed to meet federal highway standards. With that, I guess I'll...
Yes, I have a question. Your name again, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chuck.
Chuck. Were you invited to participate in the LDAC deliberations on...
I attended a few meetings. Yes.
Okay. And you made these comments to them?
I made some of these comments as when I was asked to participate. Yes.
So it's a matter that they just didn't agree with you, or they just had other reasons to not take your...
You have to ask them what their reasons
were. All right, thank you very much.
Malcolm is there, perhaps.
There was a lot of discussion and a lot of disagreement about a lot of different things. I won't go through all seven, but an example is... whether one of the people that was on the subcommittee for roads made the estimate, I don't know where he got the numbers, it would cost 50% more to build an 80,000-pound bridge than a 50,000-pound bridge. As a builder, that doesn't make sense to me. I also don't think it cuts, no offense, Chuck, but I don't think that applies to all the bridges. I think that was just the one.
That was up to
prefab slab. I think if you're building one with timbers, it's not going to be cheaper to go with a... capacity bridge. There's a lot of discussion. Like I mentioned in our last workshop, we brought up a lot of these points and wanted a revised recommendation, but the committee, the subcommittee came back and said, here it is, just like it was before. So I think we had a pretty mixed vote on it. It was 5-4 or something like that. So that's part of the reason we're here tonight.
I wanted to correct something in my introduction. I said that we're just going to talk about street standards, and I noticed that Article 7.6 fire topic is on our agenda, so ignore my earlier comments, please. Who would like to speak next on this topic?
I can follow up on what he was talking about. I brought a video I threw together today to kind of show you what a water tender would look like going down some of these private roads.
Fine.
Alan, thank you for the whole video. This is the second three photos, the first one.
Karen?
Yes.
We've got a microphone behind you here, which we'd like to pick you up, so as much as you can raise your voice. Okay.
Well, the beginning of the road starts out at 15 feet wide. Okay, and it'll go approximately half a mile before you can actually do any kind of a turnaround. And there is more structures beyond what we actually do the turnaround. So this will give you an in-cab view and out of the vehicle view. I'll move it down a little bit here. So it's narrow, goes wide. Right here, we actually encountered somebody trying to get out. So
how long is that section of the road?
So the point that we're going to actually turn around, it's half a mile, and it goes on for a full mile.
Are there any turnouts?
The last property.
Excuse Are there me. Any turnouts on that road?
We're going to come up to one at half a mile.
Oh, okay. Half a mile spacing, good.
If this was any kind of an emergency, it doesn't have to be a fire. Let's say it was a breathing problem. You had an ambulance trying to get in there, and you had two people trying to get out at the same time. We've got nowhere to pass here. If you see the vehicle in front of us, you can't pass around that either.
And this is a private road, right?
This is a private road.
Right.
About a tenth of a mile backing out from where we met to get this vehicle out of the way so we can get around it. Look right here, you'll see how many more addresses are up this road and up this road. I tell you, that's the only turnout in that entire road. Round, wide in the road. So when we're talking about turnouts, you're only recommending, what, the 20 feet?
25 foot
tapers,
I believe.
Yeah. Over and above the 12 foot, we had to go back to 30 foot to actually get this thing to turn around in that spot.
So this is the view looking in the opposite direction.
Yeah, this is us just pulling up. And right. We're going to take the camera off and we're going to turn it around. We don't turn on the bottom. So, difficulty. This is an experienced operator that's driving this. So he may not always be the one coming, my guy that just got a certificate.
Do you know what the length of the truck is, Cameron?
I should have close to 30 feet.
Dark night, pouring down rain, smoke.
Is that particular truck loaded with water?
It's got 3,000 gallons of water in it. It's 54 and some chains, about 55,000 pounds. About half a mile long. And you can see the overgrown vegetation.
How many residences does this road serve?
This particular right now address, there is 5 of them in here.
Right.
But there's, I think, 12 lots.
Is this as fast as a truck like this normally goes on a road?
Well,
like
it's beaten. They've got potholes all over the road, so it's beaten us pretty bad. If it was an emergency, we wouldn't be going any faster.
Oh.
Around 1,200 feet is the first area we're going to come up to that you can even think about a turnout. There's a big, wide driveway we can actually go into. This one couldn't fit into, but the next one can. At this point, if we ran into a bridge that we couldn't cross, we'd have to stop right here, and that'd be the end of any kind of fire suppression, because nobody from behind us is going to get past us either.
How do you know if you can cross a bridge when you're out there responding to an emergency?
Usually we know most of our bridges. If we get on something precarious, we'll get out and take a look at it, send the lighter unit over, and if they get worried about the bridge, they're just not going.
So you don't have ratings on all the bridges or anything in the county? You guys have any idea? I mean,
I've been, as they look dilapidated, I go and start hounding people to get their bridges fixed. I just send them a letter saying I'm not going to be able to.
Are you looking at the decking then, or the structure?
The decking is the initial thing I look at. And I'll look at the underneath and look at the button underneath it. If I see any kind of decay, I'm going to start questioning and ask for an engineer report.
But if it's a brand new bridge or almost brand new, it's only rated 50,000 pounds, and you got a truck that weighs more than 50, how are you going to know that it's only rated at 50? But it looked best and looked as fine, right?
Yeah, probably going to look just fine.
There's a bridge truck out there to evaluate it.
Well, if it's brand new bridge, hopefully I will have some kind of documentation for it.
Well, not necessarily brand new, but you know, something that's been there for years that's well maintained.
Oftentimes there's a stamp on the bridge, though.
No.
Really? Yeah, they'll actually put a plate on it. I've seen it on several bridges in the county. We put a plate on what the rating of the bridge is. But that's when it was installed.
The bridge I built has a stamp on it, but it's a railroad car. You've got to hang over the side to see it. It's at 155,000
pounds. We get up to this is somebody's driveway, and the next property is gated off, so we had to turn around right here. We're talking 12 foot wide, 30 foot rating. And if we don't come, no. I'm just saying, if he was the first one on scene, you know, sometimes they know brush units are coming, and they may be closer to the actual fire. So a particular water tender is also an engine, so it pumps 1,000 gallons of firefighting when they get there.
The problem with the intersections is driveways. Often, you have just quite a distance from the driveway to the.
You got just a 12 foot, and it tees right off like this particular one did. We would have had to take in two or three tries, just like we're turning out of it. These roads have fairly good surfaces. This particular road, we actually did have a fire at a structure, and we all got backed up. Because we couldn't pull into the driveway, just like you said. We couldn't pull in, so the engine had to stay up top. We just dropped lines in from there. And everybody was back there behind it.
Did you save it?
Yes. The second story, anyway. This road has one turnout.
Is this a different road, or is it an
extension? This is a different road.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought this was farther up the same one.
This is,
okay.
They're all nasty looking. I think that.
These are public roads?
They're not the private roads.
Now, if somebody applies for a subscription to a fire service like Rural Metro, do they go and check the property and determine whether or not the truck can get in or out?
When they apply through planning to, you know, under 76, as far as if they're doing a major remodel or moving a structure, adding a structure, then yeah, we will go out and we will look to make sure that they're meeting the intent.
So if they buy a house and subscribe to the fire department,
we will if they ask us to, but this
is something that I'm not agree. We are going to not sign any Article 76 until we actually set eyes on it from now on. Just one saying we can provide it, and we can't even turn into the driveway.
Yeah, the hard part is if you were to move into the area and purchase a home, there's no major renovation going on, there's no standard to apply to that situation because you're not doing anything to the property. So for us to go out and look at it and say, oh yeah, I mean, we'll go out and look and say this is what you need to do, but is there any enforcement to do that?
But even outside of Article 76, if somebody applies for fire protection and property that they bought, are there records on, I mean, let's say the house is 30 years old, are there records already saying that the fire truck can get in there or not, or will the fire department go ahead and take the subscription without knowing if they can get in, or will they check to make sure they can get in?
In the past, we're not. Check all of them and let them know what they're going to need for us to get.
And do you know if that's the case with all of the fire departments?
I know that specifically with the Metro Fire Department, they actually have a clause in their contract that identifies them from access or difficulties. It's your responsibility to provide adequate access. You know, the other companies I couldn't speak for. With primary concern that we have, that the city grants pass, is we actually do respond to the area as well from automatic aid to the Metro Fire Department and to Illinois Valley. So our engines are actually in the same midst that you're seeing here. That's kind of why I'm here, to represent our interests as well. Our trucks are specifically designed for the city environment. We did take the urban environment into consideration when we bought them, but when you're looking at the tender going down the road, that's about the size of our structural fire protection engine. And as we all know, in the districts and with the other outlying areas, no one fire department can afford to stand on their own. Like, we can't see it in the past. We depend on Illinois Valley, Rural Metro, they're in Jackson County, trucks coming over to Avis as well. And if we have a definite concern, we're putting our firefighters and vehicles at risk to enter these properties. Do you have any more, Ken?
No. Before you go on, I do have a question for Cameron on his film. How would that road that we just saw, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, how would that road change if the recommended LDAC recommendations were applied to that road?
The turnouts would be a big thing for me.
Yeah, I heard that.
There's no bridges on there, so I'm not too concerned about, as you can see, it could actually handle the weight. It wasn't digging in.
Right.
I don't think, can it actually go back and change that road? With the standards?
No, I didn't. I just meant hypothetically.
Hypothetically, no. I would definitely be able to get vehicles in and out of there without endangering our personnel.
The way it is now.
No, I'm saying if
the new standards were
applied to it.
So the new standards would have more turnouts, obviously, with the
more turn.
So it would be improved.
I'd like the turnouts to be down to 400 feet versus the 800 feet. You know, you're talking a tenth of a mile is what, 500?
Well, that's one of the comments I made last week, I think, or in this write-up that I did. We had standards of 400 feet for a road and 800 feet for a driveway, if I remember right. It seems kind of counterintuitive.
Right. It should be the same. It should be 400 feet full time. So I was looking for 400 feet, 60,000 pounds on a minimum, unless you guys have any other recommendations. 60?
Yeah.
Minimum?
Then that's fine. Okay. We do have some issues, but we can address that later on. Our vehicles, our engines are weighing right in at our normal response vehicles are 48,000, our heaviest is 52.
Okay. We have a question from Commissioner.
Yeah, I'm not sure who to address this to, so I'm just going to kind of put it out there. Maybe even Malcolm might. I've read through this stuff, and I'm really confused. For example, it talks about, you know, private roads being allowed outside planned unit developments and subdivisions. Well, what we saw here was clearly not a planned unit development or a subdivision. It was just somebody built a house a long time ago, one house, and made a road to it. Contractor came in and, you know, pushed a road through. Under these changes, and I'm in favor of planned unit developments and subdivisions having paved public roads. That's just me.
Let me just bring up one thing you said there, David.
Okay.
It's regarding private roads that aren't privately owned roads that are not in a PUD. That's the only place you can have a private road in the East Coast. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay, maybe that's where I'm confused.
A new one, yeah.
Yes, those are in existence.
So a new private road serving a single house would have to meet new standards. Is that another issue.
Hmm? Yeah, a new private road serving one house now has to meet Article 76 standards.
Okay.
All right. But this proposal is to have private roads for subdivisions with certain restrictions where it can't be extended out onto another subdivision in the future. It's got to be a total.
Okay, I am understanding that, right?
But it can't be a subdivision that's not a PUD.
In that respect, I don't agree with that. I think subdivisions and planned unit development should have paved public roads. That's just my own feeling about it. That's for what it's worth. Yes.
Yes, I give you a little bit of stint from Applegate Fire District. Yes. When we ran into this problem of access, not on the public roads. I don't think we had any crossing on the public road that didn't meet at least 50,000. We had a lot. As soon as they left the public road and into private, you had many structures that were, you know, like beams up under a wood plank bridge, far less. And in fact, I took an engine over it one night. Firefighter said, yeah, it was easy and clear. And it was, you know, three Hail Marys and about just something so long. But we went and had an engineer evaluate all questionable structures. And less than 50,000, the thing was installed in the CAD system. So when we're responding to that address, it gives us a warning, and all they get is a small unit in it. And they're told that. And if you buy the property, you'd have a red flag come up on it. Says major fire access, and the engine tenders will not be in that. And so that's one way to deal with it. So how are you going to build that into the codes? Because most of your, in our instance, all the public roads are good. As the private accesses that become a real major problem. Clearance, radius, anything else. However, there is one road in our area that has extremely steep grade, very tight radius, and it's a question of can you get a truck up that with a tree overhanging on a tight radius. And I'm waiting for the first fire unit to respond to the... it is a public road up on top of a peak where there's a relay tower up there, so it's on a high point. And it's going to be a real miracle when they run it up there. Turning around, they can have a small turnaround up there to get out, but no way are they going to access it for the public. And that is a public road.
Paved.
It's paved. But it is...
Okay. Any other questions for Cameron?
I'd like to ask a question. You had mentioned the difficulty of the intersection of the driveway itself and the private road, and I wanted to find out if the pretty sure Public Works doesn't have a drawing that we issue to people where we might truck, or does the fire districts? Do fire districts have a drawing that we give contractors, home builders, private property owners, to show them what that interval, that intersection between the private driveway and the road should be to get your rig in there?
We have one for a public road and a driveway, but not for a private road.
Fire district?
And yours doesn't include restricted residential either, I don't believe, right?
No.
Because it's not public.
We used the example given in the past, basically the Rural Land Development Code, using the public road standards.
Malcolm, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just want to comment. A lot of the stuff that we're looking at is problems that are already in existence.
Yes.
More than what these proposals are to change. You know, and like I think it was Cameron mentioned, what was it? Somebody mentioned that the existing standards for roads was too tight of a radius. Was that you or somebody else?
Well, that was me.
Oh, that was you.
For like a trust.
Okay, so I thought the existing standards for Article 76 were like a 48-foot radius.
Yeah, that's for a private driveway. not a public road or a roadway.
Yeah, and this is kind of how I look at it. If somebody wants to put an impediment on their own private property, you know, that's impediment on their property. That's kind of their right. You know, they might not get fire service, but if you build an impediment for 10 lots, suddenly you're now impacting multiple properties, and that's.
So it looks to me like, regardless of whether we approve private roads or not, there should be some standards that make it fire safe. That's my opinion. And, you know, I see the issue with having 10 homes on a restricted residential road or on a private road. Like you're saying, you've got fire trucks going in and out at the same time as people are trying to flee, there can be problems. But I wonder what the record is on some of the other counties. I know some of the guys that are on the subcommittee pointed out that some of the neighboring counties, I think Klamath maybe, I don't remember which ones, already let people build 10 homes on a single lane restricted residential road. So I just wonder, is it really a big deal? Or
do they put turnouts in
it? I'm sure they have turnouts. I don't
know. Well, a lot of the difference you'll see is in the road width and surfacing. As it increases, the road width increases, and so does the surfacing requirement.
So I know,
and that's the key.
I have a house that I built a long time ago, rental. On restricted residential roads, not paved. The surfacing back then was gravel, and it's only required to be 11 foot wide. I think even if it's asphalt, it's only required to be 11 foot wide. But it does have to have turnouts every 400 feet. Is that enough to cover the issues we have with traffic going in and out during a fire?
It helps a lot.
So the big issue, it sounds like you guys are talking about, is the turnouts.
Yes.
So
11 foot's a little bit narrow.
Yeah, it is. That's pretty it is. It's crazy. Actually, it's mostly down to about 8.5 because everybody drives right up the middle. So it seems like your biggest issue is having good turnouts, and presumably, and bridges.
Having turnouts at 400 feet versus 800.
Right.
And I would even say that having a turnout, making a recommendation for that, is also a sight distance as well put in there.
Right.
That is an issue that we originally addressed in Article 76 for the driveway issues.
And then that driveway approach, it looks to me like we're going the opposite direction from what the LDAC is assigned to do, which is to try to reduce costs for developers. But it seems logical to me that we should just say, hey, if you're going to build a house, put in a driveway approach that a truck can get into, just like you do where you come off a public road. So that's my comment.
All right, any more? Yes.
Well, I kind of agree with Chuck that if it's on your own private property, if you want to put impediments in the way of fire trucks, then, you know, that's...
But,
you know, if it's an actual road that's being used by multiple...
private road, probably
the only road. Yeah, well, I think that you know, if you've got 10 houses on the road, I think it does make sense to require some time.
I just want to comment to that comment. On the other hand, when we create building sites, we the county create building sites, and even though it's a single building site, we're creating a marketable commodity that can change hands over time. And at the first order says, well, look, I'm gonna save a lot of cost. The county's gonna let me just put in my own standard of access off of public roads onto my private road, you know, that's great. I'll save a lot of money doing that. But then you sell that property. Now you've got a next buyer, an innocent buyer that buys that and doesn't realize. In some communities that I'm familiar with in California, governments are held accountable and held liable for under-designed situations. And I don't know. We haven't had that discussion in this county. I'm new to this county. But liability, I don't like to have my county government pay any more liability insurance than they already have to pay. Somewhere along the line, I'd like to know the answer to that question.
I think that if somebody buys a house, it's up to them to do due diligence and
caveat emptor.
I think so. I mean, you just can't simply foresee every possible thing that you might want to protect a naive person from and write laws to protect them. You've got to let people have to take responsibility. And buying a home is a huge responsibility. And, you know, the more you try and protect people from the responsibilities that they really ought to be accountable for, then you create a culture where people don't expect to be accountable. They expect the government to protect them from everything. And I think that you know, part of before how we got into the mortgage issue now is that people figure, oh, if there will be a mortgage, it must be okay, so I'll buy this, you know, $500,000 house, even though I only make $40,000 a year.
Well, now you're making my point.
Well, your point is that people shouldn't be allowed to do that. My point is that people should know better. They should do that. It's not on the mortgage lender, it's not on the government to say, no, you can't do that. I'm not going to let you do something stupid. It's on the person to take a responsibility to educate themselves and not do something stupid. And if they do something stupid because they didn't do due diligence, we can't protect them from that.
Thank you. Roger had his hand up
earlier. I was just kind of to tie on to Bob and Malcolm's. I worked in Jackson County for almost 4 years before I came to Justin County. Jackson County has a whole different fire safety process in terms of it's not show us you meet your Article 76, you got a fuel grade, where's your rural metro, your fire technically, you're off and running. Actually, because there's fire districts out there, they're physically inspected before a development permit is issued. In other words, each individual fire district will go out to that property, make sure their fuel breaks, their access, all that stuff is there. They get back to the county, yes, we inspected it, it looks great. Then the permits are issued and they can start building. I can't tell you how many times we had issues come up where it was a shared bridge, an old easement road, where a guy in the back couldn't get it because the bridge up near the front didn't pass. Fire guys said, no way, we will not go across that bridge. And so the point I'm getting to is these situations can come up, and those are situations that were created years prior to the recent situation because of standards not being required or being inadequate to now 20 years later, a guy's coming in, bought a new house, is remodeling, but now he can't get fire protection because the bridge that he didn't own, that wasn't even on his property, isn't up to speed, and nobody was willing to fork the money out because I'm not remodeling, so why should I pay? So this guy, and I've seen it happen over and over again, situations like that come up. So I would just like the commission just to think about those things in the future. If we're talking about fire standards, those are health, life, safety issues. And if things ever change to a more stringent process with fire review, wildfire safety issues that come up where these things are looked at more, today, tomorrow, or when these changes are made, could be setting up bigger problems down the road. And to chime on to yours a little bit, there's not a month that goes by that somebody hasn't come into the planning department that is upset that something happened that they bought that they expected us as a government. Now, I wish everybody thought like you. It would make my life a lot easier in situations, but I can't tell you how many times people come in and they're upset because of something you write that should have been their due diligence, but yet we're the target, we're being scrutinized, and how could you let this happen, and I bought this house, so it always comes full circle back to us.
But we're training people to think that way.
I'm not training anybody to think
as a culture, we train people to think that way by saying, yeah, it's the government's responsibility to protect you from yourself.
And that's why we have that expectation.
We're not. But I think that...
So those are my comments.
But I just think that the further we go down that road, then we're creating a moral hazard for the future because we're creating a society where people do expect... They don't expect to take responsibility for doing their own due diligence. So
okay.
I think we've got expectations.
All right. Thank you very much.
I was a member of the Planning Commission for the last couple of years. Spent an inordinate amount of time trying to assure that what we approve in subdivision or road standards or anything else meets a lot of the information that we've been sharing here tonight. We go all the way from the fuels management aspect of fire to water supply, almost so ridiculous, retaining maybe a 2,000 gallon tank above the house is gravity fed if the power goes out. and it's up on top of a ridge where it doesn't have normally have any good turnarounds at the house. Do turnarounds down the road at certain distances, to certain type of pavements, restriction of grades so vehicles can get up there, radiuses are correct and so forth, access is good, the corners don't come into T-bones where you can't turn a unit to get in there, and all the way on down to where they enter the public highways. And to me, we can't catch up with the 80-90% of the past errors, but just not everybody has that problem. But for what we have responsibility for today and for the last few years, we've tried to deal with those things. So when a person says, I'm in an approved area, approved subdivision that's of recent vintage, that they're going to get something for their money and not junk like Captender. There's no water available. Everybody's blocked. And move. I just was in Bastrop, Texas several weeks ago, and I thought there's 500 houses burned. I talked to the emergency coordinator and says, no, there's 900. He says, we haven't been able to count them all, but he thinks there's 1,100 houses. And 5,000 acres that burned. He says, the first day is just, the first few hours is just trying to get people out of there. There's no fire protection, nothing. And a lot of that, what I saw was fuels, accessibility, key roads, and so forth. They had the biggest force in the world. They wouldn't have been able to protect themselves.
Okay, well, I don't know we're going to solve the philosophical difference of those who would like standards and those who don't want standards tonight, but we could go on to Mr.
We're installing them in current planning.
Pardon?
We're installing certain standards in,
yeah,
in the planning, in current planning. Yeah.
Mr. Is it Holtz?
Heitz.
Heitz.
Not a problem at all. So yeah, just going through this kind of chronologically, looking at the first restriction to the 10 lots, I don't think that's really an issue of the number of lots, as long as you're increasing the width in the road to allow for additional traffic. The fire code, when you look at it, is a great example of compromise. It takes into consideration the size of a business or building, and then, you know, there's what we consider to be an acceptable loss ratio. At what point is it not economically viable to put fire protection measures into point? If you have a restaurant that has less than 100 people, you don't have to put a sprinkler system in because we know it's just uneconomically feasible. We're looking at the same thing. Five lots, can they economically, feasibly put in a road system that's going to be equal to a county maintained road? Probably not going to be able to support it. But as you increase that number, you ought to be increasing the ability for that road carrying capacity. And doubling the number with no increase in the width or servicing requirements doesn't seem very logical. Going to the second proposed change, taking the private streets and county roads out of a PUD or some other type of agency is a little bit worrisome. I can tell you right now, in the city of Vance Pass, we do have a private streets that exist, and we have issues currently with them. And you know, we've learned our lesson in the fact that we do not have enforcement authority on those public on those private streets. So when a fire lane is blocked, when vehicles are parked side to side, I don't have the authority to tow them. I don't have the authority to force access. And I also, you know, don't have the authority to make any changes along in that. It's already pre-approved and done. So again, when you look into like Cameron access problems, if you have somebody parking a turnout on a private road that doesn't have any responsibility, there's nobody to make them move it. There's nobody to make somebody, they park their fifth wheel in there for storage. There's no way to affect that. It's kind of a lesson learned with the city's past. Also doing with enforcement, I noticed that, you know, reading through how you propose to change into the, from a PUD. A PUD has a board of directors, it has an income, it has ways to enforce means and measures. When you put that down at the community level, one, there's legal issues. I know there was some language in there for coverage of attorney costs and trying to sue or take other action when a road needs improvement to get everybody to contribute to that road improvement based on frontage. You know, that puts the burden on the one individual who's interested in improvement to sue the entire road access for improvement or to cure a bridge failure or something else. I just don't think that's very likely. It doesn't seem very
reasonable to put the burden onto one person or even a group if one person's a holdout. It just does not seem right. With the PUD or the planning and development, there's a process, there's a board, there's a way to go through, and if they do not, you know, follow through, you can put liens on property, other issues. I didn't see any of that language in there to continue with that improvement.
Joe, that was one of the things that we discussed at the LDAC, and it's a valid point, in my opinion. In fact, I think it needs to happen if you're in the private road, because I've shared roads before with exactly what you're talking about. It's, it basically comes down to who has the most energy, and it's never fair, and it always causes problems, and it doesn't get done right.
I personally live in the county. I live on one of those roads, Crow Road out in Merlin, if anybody's familiar with it. I am at the partition of where we maintain, and the folks above me don't maintain. I'm lucky, because me and my neighbors maintain my section of road. Above me, there are some places that a fire truck will not get to, especially in the wintertime. And, you know, that's their issue. But again, that one guy at the end who wants fire protection is responsible for improving that entire distance of road if he wants to. You know, we learned a lesson. That's not a good idea, because he'll never financially be able to. So why don't we plan for that in the future? Looking at the third recommendation, the frontages on BLM and Forest Service roads have no issues with that. I think that's a fine idea. They have nice road standards. I don't think there's any issues there. Flag lots we have, again, we address those in the city of Grants Pass. As long as we provide the adequate access, we have a 20-foot wide minimum flagpole, so we can be sure and actually have enough access room. It gives us our road width for our driveway. And then it also gives us our vegetation maintenance on the sides of the road as well, so we can maintain that. And, of course, if the flag lot is a long distance, over 400 feet, we require turnouts in the flag lot as well, which usually requires the flag to actually expand the full distance. So there's some kind of learning lessons there as well. That's pretty much, you know, looking at what was there for the majority of the changes that the city of Grants Pass had interest in. What I can tell you, some of the other issues as I go through, was the bridge rating system, and that we would have a desire for that to be posted. As you know, some of our trucks are really heavy, and what I brought with me, if anybody's interested, we have an aerial apparatus in the city Grants Pass that we run as well. And our new one is coming in. We don't have the privilege of staffing what we call truck company, like in the big cities, where that's all they do is drive around the big, you know, ladder truck, and that's all they do is go to calls with that. On the south end of town, when our crew's out and they're in a call in that vehicle, that is the call that we will be taking to a mutual aid assist in the county. So it's at 78,000 pounds is what we're looking at for that vehicle loaded. And what we would really like to see is, you know, the posting of the weights on all the bridges, and that be maintained. So that, like, we have an informed decision that we're going across the bridge. And we're not stopping at one that we have a question on that obviously we shouldn't, we can go across, and opposed to, you know, one that, you know, we're usually pretty good about not taking that commitment, but our fear is not crossing one that is okay. We want to know that. So a simple posting system like the state county roads currently have allows us to know what the structural integrity of that bridge is far in advance. And then, like I say, working on a 10-year cycle seems a little bit long to me. You know, looking at floods, issues of construction with heavy vehicle passage, everything. 2 years is kind of the maintenance standard that I noticed that was seemed to be the recommendation engineering standard wise. And then I already spoke to the turnouts going to 800 feet. That's you know, just short of a mile to half and back an apparatus. And I will guarantee you that, you know, when we look at the wildfire instances that do occur, we learned our lesson. Again, you know, I have to go to California to show you a really good example of that. When we look at the fires that they have down there, we know that two things come into light. One of them is two ways in, you know, the subdivision is great. I know we've wrote that into our city code, if at all possible, and it also includes into the county code as well, to have a way in and a way out. What we run into is when people panic and a fire truck comes up to them, and we've learned this lesson very well, is they don't turn, they won't move, they're panicked, and what we end up with is the bottleneck. And we have burnovers. We have both fire service and civilian vehicles are getting trapped in these areas. And then we have a burnover issue because the fire truck can't back out fast enough. You know, there's other vehicles, there's just not room to pass. Sometimes they'll run off the road. It gets into real hairy situations.
Excuse me, what is a burnout?
Basically when they get burned over. The fire actually encompasses over the vehicles and the fire trucks.
Oh.
Because they cannot physically get out of the way of the fire.
Burnover.
Oakland Hills fire was a really good example of that. If you go back and look, you can actually see the streets where the embers and the smoke and the ashes are blowing around so bad that you can't see a couple feet in front of your face. And once the fire truck's committed, it's committed. You can't back that large of an apparatus out safely, and you're backed up against a vehicle that will not basically budge as well because they're panicking on out. So also included in the recommending the 400 feet distance maximum is also the sight distance as well. We should be able to have a good sight distance between the turnouts. We're not saying if it's on a tight curve, but if it's 200 feet and you can't have any sight between the two, you might want to consider shortening those up. And I think that is the highlights of my input that we had.
So, if I can ask, were you okay with 400 feet, but a flexible standard that if there's a curve or a vertical curve, that we could shorten that?
Yeah, we're basically looking at a side distance requirement as well. So basically, 400 feet would be the maximum.
Okay.
But if you have an obstruction where you can't physically see, you're going to have that hard time of actually, can I get through here or not?
How far do you think the visual should be? The visual, how far do you need to see before you have to put in another turnout? 400 feet, 200 feet?
I would say 200 feet because, again, we're in that. We're talking about. I should step back. If we were, I think I took this out of context a little bit. We're talking the Article 76 standards, and that's kind of where my point was on that was Article 76.
And Article 76 does say 200 feet sight distance.
No, it does not. And that was a problem we ran into because we have the advance in wildfire and reduced visibility and wanting the evacuation routes to be clear. And so we wanted a good adequate sight distance to keep them around.
Any questions?
I actually have a question.
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate your concerns. Always have. Do you think parking and turnouts is an issue in the residential areas? I haven't seen it. You've obviously had more experience out there. I hardly ever see anybody parking and turnout on their own acreage. But I assume it's a worse problem in town.
I'm looking at it from our aspect of my experience in town.
Yeah.
Looking toward that those PUDs that get pretty small acreage,
mm-hmm.
and the short private streets, we're seeing that even in the county, the short private streets having issues with, especially the cul-de-sacs,
mm-hmm.
that are posted no parking. They're parking in those as well.
But you're still okay with 400 feet turnouts and just, I guess, the only other choice you've got is two-lane roads, right?
Well, yeah, that's basically it. That's why I was saying keep them in a PUD so there's a problem that the county or the enforcement agency, somebody has somewhere to go to take action against that vehicle. Like I said, currently, if you put it completely private, not even the sheriff has any ability to remove that vehicle legally. They might have just something they can pull out of their hat, but I know even the city of Grants Pass, we don't have authority and issue to do that.
Another question. You're saying if we go from 5 lots to 10 lots on a private road or a non-maintained county road, restricted residential, you would think it needs more width and better surfacing requirements. So I'm assuming you're talking about going to 2 lanes?
At least increasing, the road width where you could have 2 vehicles pass each other,
okay.
which would be getting in the 20-foot range.
Okay.
Whether it's actually 2 full lanes or not.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. We've done compromises in the past where we've actually done, gravel sides. So, then we have the main surface in the center, but it was an expanded asphalt, and then we did rock on the sides to allow vehicle passage when it was needed.
I was thinking of something along those lines. Maybe just have a paved road 10 feet, 11 by 12, whatever the span mm-hmm. should be, and just have gravel on the other side that you don't even have to use unless there's a wildfire. And then the
right, and that's
over the paved side going into the subdivision and the unpaved coming out.
Right.
Okay.
And that's exactly what we're looking at, is something for that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
I just had actually a question on this handout that was passed around at the bottom. It says 78,000 pounds and then 48,000 pounds, and I was wondering what those figures are.
78,000 pounds is going to be the weight of the new aerial apparatus the city of Grants Pass will have. That's what I was talking about, posting bridges.
And is your current one of 52,000?
Our current ladder truck is 60,000, I think. I'm not 100% sure on it.
Somebody said not maximum 52. What is your current one?
Well,
the bomb.
And then
that was just water tenders.
No, we don't have water tenders. That's one of our maximum fire engines that we have. And then the other number is the current weight of our first out engines that normally respond in the rural area.
So what's the 48,000 again?
That's our first out engines that normally respond out into the rural area.
Okay. Okay. Vivian, you had a question.
Looking at currently restricted, the maximum 10 lots, when I watched your video, it seemed to me like you needed 30 feet to take a truck down one of those roads. That's what it is. We've got 20 feet in here under D on page 407. So is that 20 feet or 30 feet? Because you couldn't turn around.
What are we talking about is a turnout.
I know.
For passing, and then the turnaround, we don't have in a road. We're hoping.
Yeah, if you don't have a turnaround, what do you need? If you don't have a little slide spot where you can back up and turn around.
Yeah. So for two vehicles to pass, a minimum would be right around 20 to 24 feet, depending.
If
it's two commercial vehicles, you can see that the road width was 12 foot, and they actually hang a little bit over there. So 24 foot would barely allow two commercial vehicles to pass, maybe.
So would you say
30
feet would be ideal?
You're talking about two different things, I think.
Yeah.
She's asking how you can turn the truck around if there's no loop or something.
Well, an actual vehicle turnaround.
How do you get out of there if you're going to get a burnover?
And that's where you basically, it's a lot more room to actually make a full turnaround.
So how much room do you need to get out of there if you're going to get burned out?
We can turn around, as you saw, we did a 12-point turn getting out of one area. And that's what we would have to do.
But you had a turnaround, right? You had a turnout.
Yeah, it was a larger turnout than normal. Because there is overhang on the back. If there is no obstructions, we can probably do it. In the 20-foot area.
I think my question was, if you don't have a turnout, you're going up a road, you see you're going to be burned out, you're going to be a burnover, how many feet do you need to get out of there? Or do you just put it in reverse and gun it?
I was going to say, you run up the road and have other issues. There's accepted standards, and there's different ways to do that. The cul-de-sac turn is very wide. We have modifieds off of that, which are called T-hammerheads and Y-hammerheads. Those are currently in the Rural Land Development Code at the approved alternate turnarounds at residents. And those are usually, I think, 30 feet deep, if I remember correctly. It's in the code, and I apologize. I don't 100% recall that number. I know the numbers from the city, and they're much, much more than we have in the county. But I think it was 30 feet depth. So if you're looking to back in and turn around,
30 feet.
It's
45 and 60.
Is it 45 and 60? Okay.
That's 30 feet might stay.
It depends on the type of vehicle, and how many turns you make.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on a straight section, you're not in anybody's driveway, and you're encountering, there's a plane front moving towards you, and you're like, and you got to get turned around, and there's that turnout.
You're
going to have to back up to hopefully the next turnout, and hopefully you can do a quick, two or three point turn there to get your nose back out. And if there's not one, that's why 400 feet is really good, because it shortens that distance that you are going to have to go backwards.
So you need turnouts every 400 feet, or you're a 30-foot wide road, 35-foot wide road. One of the two.
Well, I'd say the turnouts, the turnouts need to be at least 30 or 35 feet. So that way, if you are having to back up, if you're going to have a 12-foot standard road, and you are having to back up to, get out of that situation, you have a shorter distance of backing up. If you go to 800 feet, you have a longer distance to back up to. 400 feet, you have a shorter distance to back up to. But at least when you get to that point that you've made to that turnout, backed up to that turnout, you can at least get yourself turned around.
So you're proposing the turnouts should be big enough to be turnarounds in effect.
Yeah.
I mean, just for safety and passing.
Would that be just that there's not a turnaround at the end of the road or at the individual houses?
Well, there's also the driveways we can turn around in.
Constructed correctly
for us to turn in, we should be able to turn around in that. That would act like a...
All right, how about Metro Fire?
Basically, as I read through this, I'm pretty much on the same page with these guys as far as their recommendations. On this, having a good surface road, making sure the turnouts are adequate. 400 feet, I think, is an adequate length of space to do that. You like what Joe added with the site, the line of sight to be able to see down the road. The one thing that came to our attention under the Article 76 in the Section 76.060, not necessarily dealing with the road issue, but it is an Article 76 issue, under contract fire protection, which is what Rural Metro is. The new wordage they want to change to, the owner provides a written statement for a commercial fire protection service listed on the state fire marshal roster, certifying the property's eligibility to be covered by a fire protection contract. Currently, and I think it's as of 2 or 3 years ago, the state fire marshal's office no longer officially recognizes private fire departments. They only recognize public fire agencies. Rural Metro is unofficially recognized in the fact that we still do have a fire department ID through the state fire marshal's office, only simply for reporting issues. So we actually can report our calls, our fires, our responses, so it can be tracked through the state and reported to the National Fire Incident Reporting System. That is only, so we're technically unofficially recognized. So we are not, this wording technically doesn't, it would not apply to any, there is nobody.
Well, 76.760.
76.060. So I wrote up a letter basically from Rural Metro to give you a proposal of what could be written in place of it. It does meet a standard that is relevant to our area, the Rogue Valley. It is the Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs Association. They do have a standard set forth that any private fire department that wants to be part of the mutually auto aid agreement that Joe was talking about earlier, as far as receiving response from other agencies as well as our response to their agencies, there's a standard that they must meet in order to be part of that agreement. Rural Metro currently does meet that agreement, as well as the person going out and looking at these driveways and these roads should have some type of a certification. They have to have a certification. They have to have a certification. Our recommendation is the two certifications that they should have is through the State Fire Marshal's Office, which is access and water supply, as well as an engine company inspector certification. And the certifications are issued through the State Fire Marshal's Office. And so I don't know who I should be giving this information to so that that can be looked over. Okay, I'll get that to you.
As part of that one issue, 76.060, we'll be looking at that more in another workshop, another hearing for the Article 76. Because we've got a whole lot of recommendations for that one.
Okay, yeah, I just happened to see that in here, and I thought I should throw that out there so as you can look at that and go, oh, it doesn't really apply to anybody in this certain area of Josephine County.
The Oregon Revised Statutes does mandate that whoever has input on access and water supply must have a certification from the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Does each fire, private or public, they all have people with those certifications?
We do. Most of them I know do. The minimum requirement that most fire chiefs, that there's actually, they'll have a fire chief of class, because in small departments, the chief is the fire marshal. And they have to have that before they can have any input on fire department access and water supply. And it's awareness 1 and 2. And that is in the Oregon Revised Statutes.
Yeah. And currently with Rural Metro, there are 3 of us that do have that.
Any other questions for the gentleman from Rural Metro? Have we had not heard from other agencies or departments that would like to speak on this? All right. I'm still perplexed, since I wasn't involved in the LDAC deliberations on this that resulted in these recommendations that are before us. How so many things could have, passed through that committee without being, and been ignored. It puts a lot of this, we're going to have to negotiate a lot of these things that should have come to us already worked out, into a good solid set of recommendations. But that's just my thought. I don't know how the other commissioners feel about this, but my thought keeps going through my head. We ought to remand this back to the LDAC and perhaps have them rethink some of these things, rather than have us be the guys that have to roll up our sleeves and arm wrestle these things out. Any thoughts from the commissioners on that idea?
Yeah,
I'd go for that. You would?
Yeah.
You say you like
that? I like that idea.
Any other, those that sit on LDAC, how do you react to that thought?
Well, LDAC is actually chartered for 2 years, and LDAC expires in February. So if this is sent back to LDAC, LDAC would, the county commissioners would have to reappoint LDAC. They have to renew LDAC. And at this point, there's no funding for LDAC right now. So I don't know that
Let me understand what you're saying. LDAC, I don't know how it's organized, but LDAC actually expires in February,
yes.
And there's no plan to reconstitute it with new members or anything like that.
LDAC was created by an order of the county commissioners, and it was created for a period of 2 years.
Yeah.
And now, actually, these proposals were handed back to the commissioners back in June, and it took 4 or 5 months before
right.
the commissioners actually went and turned it over to us. So had that happened in a timely manner, there might have been time for a matter that failed at. Mm-hmm. At this point, just my personal opinion is that unless the county is going to go and reauthorize LDAC for another period of time, there is not going to be an LDAC to an attitude.
And you think that
the commissioners that created LDAC, two of those commissioners are no longer on the board, and the third that was on the board at that time actually didn't approve the creation of LDAC.
Oh.
So I just don't know that's going to happen.
Anybody else is talking?
Oh,
I'll just say,
Jim, go first. Talked to Jack in another arena.
Went down the hall.
Oh, okay.
Let us know, who is Jack?
Jack Swift, and he was on LDAC.
Okay.
He's on the subcommittee for Rose, so like when.
I don't think he was on the Rose subcommittee. I don't think he was on the Deer Ring. I don't know if he's on Rose or not.
But was he on LDAC?
Yeah.
Okay. And he has said there were reasons why we needed to get some of these things passed and through, because we were out of compliance with other laws somewhere else. And I may be completely misquoting him, but that's what it seemed like to me when he was talking about, it's going to take you guys 2 years to get it through, and it should be through by June, and there was some reason for that.
Hmm.
So when he comes back, can I ask?
Well,
do you know what it is, Peggy?
Let me ask the planning director, are you aware of any laws that we're creating urgency in this matter?
No.
We're out. Okay.
Dave? Just in response to your question, my feeling is, yeah, I agree with you. Some of the recommendations that came forward, I think, were probably because it was a citizens' committee and there was a lot of opportunities. I just read through all the minutes and everything, and it seemed confusing to me. And it seemed like it was because maybe there was a lot of disagreement. I don't know. But I think remanding, and I think it needs to be straightened out, but I'm not sure remanding it back to the LDAC committee is a good idea.
You
think it would just happen again? And
you think the commissioners here are fully capable of solving these lines?
Well, I think we may not make some people happy, but I think that's part of our job.
Mm-hmm.
I guess is what I'm saying is that we need to hash it out and come to our sort of recommendations based on the citizens' input that we receive. And then it'll go to the county commissioners, and they'll either,
Yeah. Did somebody else have their hand up before Peggy's? Okay, go ahead, Peggy.
I just wanted to point out that I would not judge all of the LDAC recommendations by the road standards. On the road standards committee,
yeah.
That was before I was on LDAC, but from what I'm aware of, it was a divided committee, and it was I believe there were 4 people on it, and 2 of them are no longer in LDAC. So. I know that a lot of people felt that subcommittee that it went on and on, and so, by the time that I joined LDAC, that was already over with, so
right.
I don't have any first-hand knowledge of that, but I know
we
that...
We can't blame you.
But, well, I just don't know what happened. I know that there was a lot of people
okay.
who thought it was driving me crazy, but, I was on the Deer Ridge Range Committee. And I think that the proposal out of that committee is very coherent and very well researched
right.
and supported, and was unanimously agreed on by LDAC.
as opposed to the Rose one, which was very divided. And the Article 76 one, which Malcolm did, he did a really very thorough job of researching that and presenting that. And I wasn't on LDAC at the time, but I did read his presentation. And I think that we have unanimously agreed on. So the Rose one is the one where there was consensus.
Okay, I didn't mean to imply that I thought the whole kit caboodle recommendations were...
Yeah. And likewise, I probably was a little strong. I do agree with the deer one was very well thought through, and it was easy to understand. So I didn't mean to imply that they were all...
I think the article makes it simple.
Yeah. But I just know that... Well, we heard from public County Public Works last time, Nora, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have anything else to add to that? Your testimony last time or your comments tonight? Okay. Because
mm-hmm.
in combination with... the comments of the city, the comments of the county public works, and the comments of the fire people, folks that are here tonight, the agencies. This particular one is sure seems like it was rushed through or something. That's all I can say. I won't say it anymore. But all right, and we'll ask one thing of the planning director when he speaks is when we have public hearings in this matter, we're going to take these one at a time. These issues, these categories of issues.
Okay. Go ahead directly. As Margaret pointed out, there are, several separate LDAC recommendations that came to you. These are actually in four categories as well, and I think that's part of what the Planning Commission could decide. How do you want to divide it?
All right.
You could take two of these recommendations, three of them, all four of them, one of them, none of them. You can take any choice out of that and take that to public hearing.
You're talking about roads, though, right?
Just
the roads.
For this proposed changes to the development code for roads, there are four separate categories here. You could take all of them, some of them, none of them. You can revise that. The Planning Commission is the hearing body on this matter. It's not a resource property, so this one goes to the Planning Commission, then it goes to the board for an ordinance.
Right.
So you're the final, essentially, you make findings and you make a decision, and it goes to the board, and they choose to adopt it or not. And the same thing with the Deer Winter Range Standards and Article 76. It obviously needs to be reviewed and was written by this committee in whole chunks, but that doesn't prevent the Planning Commission from saying, we like this portion of it, we like this idea, and we don't like that. So that is always your option. This is a legislative matter, and therefore the final ordinance language can be whatever the Planning Commission wishes it to be.
All right.
I wanted to add to that one thing that we didn't discuss tonight was the third recommendation on this sheet regarding Forest Service and BLM roads to be used for frontage, that land divisions to be allowed off the roads.
It was discussed by one of the fire groups, I believe Bill said it was fine with him, didn't it?
Yeah. Right. The fire access is one of the issues.
Yep.
And I did write a memo to LDAC, and I don't believe I brought it with me, but I can supply that to the Planning Commission. And I had some conversations with the U.S. Forest Service and BLM, more with BLM, and their process is really not an easement. I think a lot of people refer to it as easement, but it's actually just a permit to use the road, and it's an annual permit that property owners buy. And that permit presumably is used for road maintenance, but the road maintenance fund for federal roads is a bigger issue, as we all know, than one person or two people in their permit. So they buy a permit for access. That doesn't necessarily guarantee them anything other than the use of the road as the road exists. It doesn't guarantee long-term maintenance. There's no road maintenance agreement with the federal government that you would usually have in an access easement or other kind of road maintenance agreement. So that's really the character of that particular road use access permit from the federal government.
All right.
So in effect, if you were to have a lot or buy a lot and build a house on it, you would have to get a permit from either BLM or Forest Service.
Right. And that permit is revocable? In other words, they can take it away from you?
It's been done.
Yes.
There's a lot of people.
So, you give it back to Peggy's statement. I guess it is buyer beware.
Absolutely there.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't do that.
There's a lot of houses up that are accessed mm-hmm. off of the Forest Service. I didn't know there were
revoked. Wow. Well,
yeah, I actually talked to her a couple of years ago. A lady in Colorado had her property was surrounded by U.S. Forest Service. And they just closed the road. Just closed it off.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're waiting for her to get in.
From what I understand, in speaking to the representative from BLM, they rarely happens to keep the road open. What they do is they just don't maintain it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that property owner has maintenance responsibilities on the road. Obviously, if they're on a main stem road, the road's going to last a lot longer than one of the spurs. But that's the process, and I just wanted to make that distinction for the planning commission between access permit and easement, because they're a different kind of legal concept.
Actually,
is this a question for Dave? Because I have a question for David before we leave.
This is just about the Forest Service and BLM revoke being to revoke it. I actually interviewed a retired Forest Service staff officer who said that the federal law actually requires if there is private property within Forest Service owned place, the law requires them to provide access, but they can put all kinds of restrictions on it. And they can absolutely require, if there's only one private property there, they can require them to maintain it themselves. And I'm also aware of BLM actually starting to charge people for access to their property. That is something.
Yeah, that's what Davis said.
Yeah, they're not going to actually shut it down so you have no access to your property. They cannot legally do that, but they can make all kinds of restrictions that make it very difficult to get to your property, and it is definitely a buyer beware situation.
Okay, Malcolm.
It seems to me if we're going to address this roads suggestion, which I guess we're mandated to by the county commissioners, we can break it up into a bunch of parts. We can discuss it amongst ourselves and say, throw that out as stupid, or we can say, I like these, but I want to have some suggestions here on maybe improving the way they've worded it, and we can either just discuss it amongst ourselves, or we can invite the people that were on that presented it and wrote it up in the first place as to right. present it to us. Would be an option, I think, right?
And explain why they wrote it down.
Yeah, okay.
I thought they was you. I mean, in a way.
I was not on a segment. I don't remember if I was a voting member of LDAC when this was voted on. Because I either wasn't allowed to vote or I said I was going to abstain and was told I couldn't abstain. I don't remember exactly.
Well, it's a good easy way to obscure things by saying, well, they did it, you know. And
well, we,
I did it.
LDAC, we broke it up into different subcommittees for different subjects. That was the chairman
okay.
of
right.
76. So, blame me for 76, don't blame me.
Okay. Somebody has their hand up.
Did you want to ask Jack?
I have a question for Dave.
Well, yeah, I was
going to
ask.
Okay, go ahead.
Jack Swift, you were on LDAC, and in another venue sometime in the last couple of weeks, you were talking about LDAC, and you think it should, your recommendations you guys have worked on for a couple of years, and it was going to probably take two more years to get through, and that was just, you know, unacceptable. I'm not sure if you use the word unacceptable, but it seemed to me like that was just very irritating, and that you thought it should move forward faster than it had. And was there a reason? I thought maybe there's some legal reason behind that it needed to be approved by a certain date for a certain thing to happen.
Yes. Now let me interrupt your comments right now. While you were out, we heard these same comments from Peggy. So do you have to answer her question directly? Do you know of some legal mandate that it requires urgency in this matter from at a higher level? Okay. Thank you. I have a question for Dave. Is he still here?
Yes.
The gentleman Chuck from County of
Public Works,
suggested, I haven't heard a response on this, but I'd like some clarification. He suggested that some of these things ought not to be in the Rural Land Development Code anymore and ought to be put in what?
the...
Well, they're like the dimensions and so forth, like the turnout dimensions.
Yeah.
And spacing is typically in the road standards and not in the
okay.
planning code.
Okay.
Could I have your thoughts on that, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
He's right. And that's pretty much up to Public Works and planning to decide, you know, where does it go in the code? Is it a technical manual? Is it in the RLDC? In bringing these to your attention, we just gave it to you as it was written from LDAC. So I guess I'd request that the Planning Commission look at the standards themselves, decide if that's a standard that you think is applicable, and then staff can figure out where it best fits in the code.
The commissioner stated, I presume, in one action, say, put this in the engineering, the road standards, and put this in the development code.
Right.
They adopt those, so.
Right. All right. All right. Yes, Roger.
Just to kind of add on to that, you can think of that as there's the building code and all the rules and regulations, how you build something, but we typically... at all costs, try not to put any of that in the development code because those change regularly or can change, and then you got to come back and update
right.
the code. So specifics like that, I think, is kind of what Chuck's talking about. Is those are standards for building, physically building a road. We're not in the business of building a road. We just need the basic standards. So nitty gritty, probably best left out.
I think that the land use portion of this is. What these recommendations represent is a shift from public roads to private road networks, and that's the land use issue. And some of the the landowner agreements or lack thereof that some of the fire folks talked about. What does that system look like? How does it access properties? What kind of easements do we need to be thinking about? How much does the county want to be? There are some recommendations to the county several times here in the private road proposals. And so one of the things to think about from a public policy standpoint, if it's a private road, why is the county involved at all? Perhaps we're hands-off. Allow private roads, but don't dictate any standards. But then, obviously, the fire departments have a concern in that regard. So... it's that policy shift that's really the Planning Commission's for, I think, to understand it, understand what the potential impacts might be, and then evaluate whether that's a good public policy or not. And if it is, adopt private road standards with the assistance of the county engineer, and then we figure out where they go in the code.
Well, that ought to be the first thing we decide, then, is it? Do we regulate private roads or not?
Well, for what it's worth, we already regulate privately maintained roads in the county in the form of the restricted residential roads. So we've required that when they're built, they meet certain standards. I personally feel fine with allowing private roads. I feel pretty good. I feel like Peggy has a valid point. People need to do stuff for themselves, but there's other people going to be on these roads, including firefighters, well drillers that are going over these bridges, and innocent children and visitors. That I think we need to have some basic standards where it's safe enough that a fire truck can get in there. It's safe enough where a person in a heavy rig doesn't have to worry about it's going to fall into a canyon because the bridge breaks. That's my philosophy. I don't see a problem with the county saying, okay, it can be privately built, privately maintained, if there's a way to maintain it. Like the community has a homeowners association, road owners association, or something, but with decent driveway accesses where a fire truck can get into it. Do something with, or if you're going to go with 10 lots on a one-lane road, you've got to widen it out enough to where at least you can pass each other along the road with a fire truck and people that are fleeing. Otherwise, you're going to get people up there that are stuck in a fire. I just don't know, I can't see doing that.
Somebody refreshed my memory, and I know I looked this up at some point, but I don't recall. What is the difference between a private road and a restricted residential road?
Good question.
Restricted residential road is public right-of-way, but it's not maintained by the county.
So private road is on private property, and a restricted residential is not private property, but it is privately maintained?
Yeah, owned by the county, though.
By the public.
for the public action effort.
Oh, but the county? It's the public?
It's the public. The county is the local agency that will take care of it. But as an example, if it was near the city limits and the city annexed it, it would then become a city street, city right of way, and so on the team.
But, yes.
I had a question I wanted to pose of the Public Works, and I think Rob Brandis and I, Public Works Director, and I were discussing this earlier today, and Chuck, I don't remember if you were in on that conversation, but the transition, especially since we're looking at UGB expansion and some areas of the county being annexed in the future by the city, does Public Works have a concern, or are those concerns alleviated about pulling in and accepting as eventual public roads anything from that transition from a county road to a city street? What about transitioning those roads? What about utilities? And, you know, if they're private, obviously that's going to be a difficult handoff. Maybe when the city wants more connectivity, when densities increase.
I've never had a conversation with the city yet about private streets and the transfer or how all that works. But I do know on the restricted residential, which is a local access road, is what the statutes call it, it's a local access road. Once they move into the city limits, it automatically transfers into the city, out of the city. So it's still not maintained by the city, but it's under city jurisdiction, city rule. Hard to explain, but it's an automatic transfer as compared to a county-maintained road. Once it's annexed, we then have to request the city to take the street.
Okay. But when it's annexed, essentially right-of-way is right-of-way. The same people would be maintaining that road for restricted residential road. Okay. The transfer from a private road to a denser.
To a public road?
Yeah.
If it was transferred, you'd have to dedicate the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. You'd have to build it to some county standard.
Right.
Or city standard if it's within the city. I'm kind of talking for the
city. I think we've been doing a voluntary with this. If it's within the urban growth boundary, they've been meeting city standard.
Right.
But other than that, yeah, it's pretty much.
It's essentially what it is now. I don't know how these standards would, if they would, I can't. I haven't really thought about that question much and how it would impact or how these standard proposed changes might impact that.
Yeah, we do have private roads and PUDs that are within the area, and we already have those issues. So we're not creating any new, just that I'm aware of.
No, okay.
Peggy and then Dave.
One more quick question about the restricted rural roads. Does local access mean that they don't intersect with any other roads? They just get in the cul-de-sac?
But they can be miles and they can actually connect them to other roads.
So that's not really relevant or possible.
Yeah, local access basically means that it's only to serve a localized area, but it doesn't really define what the localized area is.
I see, but there's not necessarily any, like if you go to the end of that road, there's not necessarily any alternate route out.
Correct.
Well, there's, correct me if I'm wrong, but if the road cannot physically serve more than 5 lots, and it can be a restricted residential road, it can be one lane, it's not going anywhere else. If there's a potential for it to go somewhere else, they have to build the base 2 lanes wide in case somebody ever carries out. That's right. No longer a restricted residential road at that point.
It has to be at that point, but that is.
Hell for confusion more.
And a private road is always just a demand road.
It's always on private property. And it's like a driveway
multiple lots. I'm not sure. I think you're just getting to my question. I know this is going to sound like a stupid question, but I'm hoping you'll consider it a naive question. Is a private road then simply a road that each, like you guys showed me with the video you showed, a long, long road, each property owner says, okay, gives an easement to each and every other property owner to say you have right to pass, and then they call that a private road? Is that what a private road? Somebody's got to own the road.
Yeah, people own the roads. Individuals own the road. They may have agreements. They just may be grandfathered in.
Okay, so there's a variety of different ways.
There's some where everyone owns like a 5-foot strip down this road, and there's long flags. It just looks really bizarre on the maps.
Okay.
So you're driving on like
eight tax lots as you're going down.
Yes, okay. So that, and that, okay, I understand. I just want to make sure I understood what a private road was. And that's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
All right. Well, the next question is, how should we proceed on this one? Yes.
I would like to make a motion that the Planning Commission meet the approve the parts we can approve, and then the ones that we can't, don't refer it back to them. I agree with David now that we should just work it out.
We do have to have a public hearing on it, too. We can't just work it out.
We have to do it in a public hearing. That's
what do we have to do exactly? I thought we had to do a public hearing when it was done. Not as we work out the
details. Well, we have another workshop. Are you suggesting another workshop with LDAC chair people here?
Yeah, let them explain what.
I don't know why that's not possible. I wish they were here tonight.
Is there any issue with public meeting law about how I'm going to speak at a workshop and stuff like that? I know there was
the Planning Commission pretty much has the ability to invite anyone to come and make a presentation.
I see. As long as they're invited, then it doesn't conflict with this. It doesn't become a hearing, essentially. Because I know Harold expressed a concern about that at the last workshop.
Well, public hearings have to be advertised, and there's a decision that comes out of it. So in a workshop, it could be a presentation from anyone.
As long as the decision doesn't come out of it, then
it's like, much like the water resources people did a workshop for you, and Steve Rich did a workshop, and you could ask for more detail from any group.
Great, thank you.
But when it comes to finally, eventually having a public hearing and making a decision on these recommendations, it seems like you suggested the first decision we ought to make, which might make everything else moot, is whether or not we want to continue regulating private roads. That's question one. The decision tree says the answer to that is no, we can all go home.
I think the fire department would strenuously object to that.
But I heard it as a possibility.
Well, we don't have to make these guys happy.
I don't want to see them burned to death there. Come on, on a trail.
I don't know if you ever say we do what we think is right. Hopefully take their views into consideration.
We're here to serve you. That's what we're giving you, our information, what we feel is correct.
I just had this mental picture of a burn over.
I can imagine how that decision would go, but anyway, I don't know. Let us assume that we are going to continue to be in the business of setting standards for private roads in some way, shape, or form, however small, maybe. I don't know. What do you think of the idea then of having one more of these workshops? We invite the LDAC chair people or spokespersons who would come in and explain some of these things as to what the dilemma was that prevented them from taking the advice of professional experts in this matter, firefighters.
Give Ann and I some direction on that, Stan. Did you want to do one workshop on all three topics, Deerwinter Range, Article 76, and road standards? Did you want to pull Article 76 and the road standards together? Maybe Deerwinter Range is a separate matter. I think that's a...
We already have a workshop for the Deerwinter Range set up. We can invite them.
Yes, let's do that for sure. Okay. And that leaves these other two issues.
What date is
that?
It's on the December at 2:30. So what you're asking is for that one, you need to invite the people from LDAC.
Nice to invite everyone if they want to.
I think the most important thing is to bring the road committee or a spokesman for the road committee or the chairman of the roads committee.
Subcommittee is what you're talking about, but then invite the entire... The chairman of the roads committee is no longer a member of LDAC,
but I think we could
invite him anyway.
Don
Doherty, yeah.
Don Doherty.
And I think it would make sense to invite him anyway. And Bob Hart was on that committee, and we could invite Bob.
Pose the question to the chair of that committee. When's your next
one? For January.
I was going to say maybe pose the question to the chairman, Harold Hagen, and he can forward a recommendation for members to make decisions.
That's another good idea.
Rather than us.
Okay.
Stan?
Yeah, David.
Throw out an idea. It seems to me that the Deerwood arrangement seems relatively simple, and we covered it pretty. Maybe we could do more than one at this December 5th meeting. Is it? Do you think that's tackling too much, or?
I'll tell you, we can put a lot of time into this road thing. It's going to help.
Okay. Do you think it needs unto itself, it's going to be an issue?
Well, the road thing, as I understood, probably took more time in LDAC than anything else. So, you know, maybe we might be able to combine Article 76 and Deer, because I think they're both pretty straightforward, although they're not really relevant.
But roads and 76 go together.
Yeah.
Roads and
76
go
together.
Yeah. Okay. I'll rescind my comment. I think maybe they need more time.
All right, David, we originally set Deer Winter Range only for the 5th. Because remember, we had a public hearing scheduled that evening at 7 o'clock, so we only had an hour time frame. Yeah. But now we've got more time on the 5th, so we could, and apparently we haven't advertised, so we could add an item to that agenda.
Start at 6 instead of 6:30?
No. No, 6:30 yet. This particular conference room has to be at 6:30. There's other meetings in there. No, not this one. It's the Marine Hill Conference Room, 510 North of 4th. But I'll be sending out the agenda and also the map and everything here this week. So you'll have something in hand before.
So instead of doing Deerwin Range, is it a possibility to change it from Deerwin Range to do roads that night?
But to add the roads. Yeah.
Well, the roads are going to take a long time.
And the presentation on the Deer Winter Range is, what, 55 minutes long or something? Oh, no, I missed it. It was a long presentation, wasn't it, that the gentleman wants to make?
There was one gentleman that made one to LDAC that was about that long. But
well, we don't know that he's going to be.
People felt that wasn't necessary.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But I would suggest if we're going to do two in one session, that we would do the Deer Winter Range and Article 76, even though they're totally unrelated. I think those are the two that are the most straightforward, and we can get through them quickly. I think we'll take longer.
Have the members of the Planning Commission read the Article 6 proposals yet?
No.
Article 76. 76. Because I think it's straightforward, but some people may totally disagree. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of inclined to take these one at a time and not mix too many things up together. The roads, the things,
it's
complex. By the way, here's a deer issue on the 5th. And is there another date nearby that we can then talk about this roads in Article 76?
I'd love to just get the Deer Winter Range and Article 76 settled, because I think those are really straightforward. And the road, I suspect, is going to be more controversial if I could.
Okay. Hold your thoughts. Whatever it take. Okay, what do you all think? Here, Deer Winter Range and Article 76 in one meeting?
I'm okay with that. I think that would work.
On the 5th.
And whether we get totally through Article 76 or not, I don't know, but we can certainly get some headway on it.
Yeah, and if we don't get through it, then we could add it to the roads one, finish that up, and then go on the roads.
And there's kind of a connection between the two anyway, so it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to at least roll over into the road standards and make sure that they're mesh.
But I would highly suggest everybody read those articles from the 6 changes, because it's straightforward, but it's also a little bit
complex. 5th of December. That's early.
Oh, no, I
should. Oh, okay. Okay, one commissioner could not make the second hearing until January for medical reasons, so.
What hearing?
The next workshop, rather.
No,
she can make.
I'll make that one.
Okay. But the other one, road standards.
There was one scheduled on the 14th, isn't it?
That's tentative,
though. That's due to change. So how about the tentative? If that gets canceled, could we tackle the next one then?
When's then?
The one that's on the 12th, the one that's tentative. since we have to commit to be here anyway, since it's tentatively scheduled, how about saying if that does get canceled, then we would just use that time.
What month?
That would be December 12th.
Yeah, we just got a request to push it into January by one of our...
And I can't be here on the 12th either.
Oh,
just one day for particular reason, but it was just a bad day.
Then we probably are into January with the next workshop. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And what day of the week do it on? Well, normally Planning Commission does it on Mondays.
There's the 9th. The 16th is
Monday. The 9th is out. That's when the LNAC meets.
And on the 23rd?
So where are we?
Well, I guess if we're in January, you're looking at the 23rd.
Okay.
Is that going to work for everybody? No, Bob?
I should be back to last by now.
Pardon me?
Okay.
The 23rd of January, is that?
23rd.
Wait, okay, let's clarify this a little bit. Okay, so on the 5th of December, we're going to do the deer winter range and begin to do the Article 76.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and that's at 6:30. All right, agenda and everything will come out this week on that one. So then you want to continue the road standards, continuation of discussing the road standards on the 23rd of January.
Right, which is what day of the week?
It's the Monday.
Monday.
And where would we do that at?
Well, is that the one that you want to ask the LVAC people to come to and discuss?
Right.
And have their comments. Is that right?
I think it should be.
So then, would this room be available, Nora, that we could do that and large enough?
Ambassador.
Okay. Ambassador calls this month. Oh, really?
Presumably, I don't pay rent here.
So the 23rd of January sounds good for everyone, 6 o'clock.
Yep.
For the workshop for road standards, in relation of what we're doing. Okay.
And the one on the 5th is at 6 o'clock also?
No, the one on the 5th is at 6:30.
Right. I got
and it's not here. It's at Marie Hill Conference Room.
Yeah. And that's 6 p.m. Yeah. And you're going to send us a map for that, right?
Yes. I will send everything out on that this week.
And you're going to contact Mr. Haugen to ask him for...
We will contact Mr. Haugen, yes.
To go to the January 23rd one or to the December 5th?
Both.
Yes, we will contact him for both. Okay, so we good?
We're all good to go. We don't make motions and things like that.
We still have a motion on the floor that Vivian made.
Can I make a motion? We're not in here.
Okay. That was my question.
I withdraw whatever it was.
You can the motion, you can't make. Thank you all.
Article 76.
Okay.